Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Chatting Between Takes. I'm your host, Sean Benson. Oh, man, I'm so excited about this podcast. Okay, so I'm about 260 miles from Los Angeles, and I just crossed the border into California. And I want to share this with you, okay? So, you know, I did the podcast yesterday, which, again, who knows when I'll post these, but I'll post them in order. So if you're listening in order, you'll get it in order. So anyways, after I did the podcast yesterday, it started raining and basically was as torrential a rain as I've ever driven in, quite literally ever, for 12 hours. I don't mean 12 fucking hours before then it finally got like misty and my wiper blades started to ice up. And that was my last however long. I was on the road about 17 hours. So anyways, part of that was a little bit frustrating, but I also am on this trip for a reason, because I fucking love driving, and the second I have enough money, I'm going to campaign in endurance car racing. So I'm not going to get fazed by a bit of torrential rain, truly. I mean, it's not ideal. I didn't come on the trip to drive in rain, but I came on the trip to come on the trip, and if it rains, then I drive in rain. Anyways, got a nice hotel room, chilled out. Had a bit of work to do this morning. Had to like tape auditions for my hotel room. And by the way, actors listening, got this, you know, one of these many apps. Really works. Where you record the scene, but you press a button while your lines are being said. And then when you do them later, it mutes your lines. Very cool. Worked out well. But anyways, so you know, yesterday was not the best driving day, and then today was fucking glorious. Started out in the snow, by the way. I was just east of Albuquerque, came out, and I put my cover on at night, and it's covered in snow, like inches of snow. And the whole reason why I kept driving last night, beyond when I was super tired, was to get past where my app told me the snow was, into where it would be above zero. Wrong. That same kind of wrongness is why I once motorcycled over the Siskiyou Pass coming from Vancouver down to Cali in a snowstorm. I mean, like foot and a half deep. Actually thought I was going to die. Like actually, not fake actually, but actually a few times just thought, yep, I'm sliding over that cliff. But I couldn't stop because there's nowhere to stop. Even though all the trucks were stopping to put their chains on, but I could have froze on the mountain. It was insane. So anyways, I checked my weather that morning and that wasn't supposed to happen. Same as last night. No big deal though, because soon I hit the sun. And tonight saw one of the nicest sunsets of my life. And I mean, I fucking grew up on Georgian Bay during the summer. And then I remember going to Ia in Greece. O-I-A, I think is how you pronounce it. The northern tip of Santorini. And I've talked about this. This is the ride I thought I was going to die on. And you know, these were the legendary, like, best sunset in the world. And I'm backpacking through Greece. And I'm like, oh, my God. And it was okay. I mean, it was okay. It was no fucking Georgian Bay. Since having been to Greece and watching 2.5 months worth of sunsets in a row, they're good, but they're no Georgian Bay. This tonight was as good as Georgian Bay. Different. Big, mountainous, desert, weird, gorgeous. But that's not why I'm so excited. So I'm driving along, and about 8-9 minutes ago, I didn't realize I was or wasn't in California. I sort of lost track. It's dark here now. And I just saw this sign that said, "Welcome to California." And I just started laughing and was in the car just like, "Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Oh shit." And that, my friends, that feeling hasn't stopped. And man, if you want to know if you like something, see if you ever have that feeling towards it. If you don't have that feeling towards it ever, you might like it, but you might not love it. You know? I don't know. Maybe it's just me because I'm a big fucking kid in a man's body. And after, man, 3 days of driving, I tell you, it's middle-aged man's body. I'm working on it. Such joy. Such joy crossing that damn border. Oh my God. I fucking love this state, man. I mean, I lived here for 7 years, not like one. And I got off booze and drugs here. I made some of the best friends in my life who I'm going to visit this week here. You know, real stuff, like real stuff. And that doesn't even address the fact that, you know, I did some good work here and it helped my career and all that kind of stuff. So, no, I'm just talking personally. But again, I don't know that I feel laughably happy until it happens. And I used to sort of try and manufacture feelings like that. I remember, so when I was like 13, a bunch of us, we were taking our Bronze Sail 4 and our Bronze Sail 5. This was Canadian Yachting Association sailing test levels. And me and Stu Heisted, we were the youngest two. We were both the 13-year-olds, and everybody else was like 14, 15, or 16. And we both passed our Bronze 4, which was kind of a foregone conclusion. And then the assumption was we wouldn't pass the 5, but, you know, we'd get there the year after. And, you know, we both sailed really well together. Man, I've got this, there's this great picture, I don't have it, up at my camp, of me and him. He's out on the trapeze on a laser too. We might even be flying the spinnaker in that picture. I can't remember. I'm skippering. I remember these days so clearly. Anyways, we both got our Bronze 5. We did well enough on the testing. They had an independent tester come in from Toronto, blah, blah, blah. We did it. And I remember just feeling this quiet sense of, my God, if I'm being honest about it, there were two quiet senses. One was satisfaction, and one was almost a hint of letdown, because I was just at the age where goals were starting to meet with achievements, and the achievements never felt as good as I thought they would. And that, maybe I'm just revisionist history-ing this, but no, I'm gonna say this is true. There was just a quiet, I remember walking out onto the Deech Beach up at Kitchee, my camp, and going, And you know, what I loved was the fucking 6 a.m. mornings to go out and practice rigging and spinnakering and all that stuff. And the fact that we'd stay up super late at night, you know, and the whole crew would be in the sailing shed, and Dave Watson and, you know, Paul would be teaching us. And it was just really like, I felt special being part of that group. And it was all about getting my Bronze 5 as part of that group. But, you know, once we kind of all did our exam, the group was done. I got the Bronze 5 and I felt, you know, nicely satisfied, little disappointed, and generally good. And Stu Heisted ran around that beach jumping and cheering and doing somersaults and backflips. He was so happy. And I wanted to feel that way. You know, I wanted to like, yeah, me too. And I just didn't, you know, and I'm still so proud of that. And I remember Paul Gifford coming by. Paul's one of my childhood heroes. And he came by and dropped off a Canadian Yachting Association shirt that said, I'm for sale. But it was S-A-I-L. There's probably 1,000 photos of me wearing that shirt, because it was only about 2 years ago where it got so shredded it wasn't even recognizable as a shirt. So I had to ditch it. That's how much that shirt meant to me. But that's more that it came from Paul and that he stopped by my house to drop it off. He was from my hometown. So anyways, So if I had to pretend I was that excited to cross the California border, I promise you there'd be a real thinness to it. But when I saw that sign and I just started going, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, yes, yes, then I kind of was like, huh, that's how Stu Heisted must have felt. Because that was so genuine for him. He wasn't faking shit. And I think I tried to do like a somersault or something. Like, I wanted vicarious excitement from him. It didn't come that day. But boy, did it just come for me, man. I, I have so many feelings. You know, I talked about my great desire, not only in life, but on this trip, that could go unrequited, it could not, I don't know. When you sit in a car alone for up to 17 hours a day, you know, it can get really connected. And sometimes the goal seems really clear and like, I'm just gonna do this. And sometimes, fuck the goal. You know, I'm fine. I don't mean I'm fine big picture. I mean, in this moment, I'm fine. So let's banish all the extra stuff. And in a way, I almost think the goals are a double-edged sword, but they serve such a great purpose because through goals, I find satisfaction because it makes me work. You know, I talk about getting out of debt. I talk about getting off booze and drugs. So there's these sort of like daily movements toward broader, bigger goals and ideas of who I am. But they in themselves aren't maybe as important as the fact that through them I create habit and occupy time in my body and in my skin that's actually non-combative. It's just doing. But then, so the point though is that then that gets to a sort of unity where I feel okay. Just in the doing. I believe action is where we, you know, the devil makes use of idle hands. Is that a saying or something? I buy that. Because when I'm active and I'm, you know, working on the car, cleaning the house, doing the karate, working on barn wedding stuff, I'm just aligned. There's unity there. It's when I sit around and think that my fucking shit gets all sideways. And so when I'm driving, it's a different kind of thing because at a certain point, again, if you've never done a 17-hour drive alone, you don't necessarily have to do 3 days in a row like me. This is an obsession and a joy for me. Like, I'm going to keep driving to different places tomorrow. It'll just be in LA because I'm going to get there in a couple hours. But at a certain point, the thinking goes away and the being shows up. And it is interesting for me, too, because the last number of times I've done drives like this, they've been very peaceful. You know, when I drove out to PEI this summer to pick up Emily and drive back with her, my drive there was really laid back. Other than having a fiberglass sports seat that was a bit too snug on my hips, it was just joy. There was no, you know, I podcasted from it. It was good stuff. When I was 28, 30, 32 doing these trips, a lot of anger, a lot of difficulty being with myself. It was part of the reason why I'd sort of force it. And then around hour 8, I'd almost crack. It was a version of a sensory deprivation chamber. This is a bit less like it. You know, I'm kind of listening to podcasts and singing songs and just generally enjoying the time and especially the drive. I mean, I certainly don't speed, but a lot of people in the desert do. And, yeah, I don't, but a lot of people in the desert are just kind of driving 100 miles an hour for hours on end through swoopy sort of hilly, straight, flat, whatever kind of roads. I don't, but I've seen some cars get up to 110 miles an hour for sustained periods of time. Not me, though. I just stick to the speed limit, but I have noted some cars doing that, and I have noted that the drivers of those cars are very content. They just be chilling, thinking. Maybe they're listening to podcasts too. Hey-o. Wait a minute, what's he saying? Why doesn't he ever break the speed limit? Because I'm a law-abiding citizen. California, the first time I came down here, I was in theater school. And I don't know if I talked about this, but we had a TV film course, and I was hitting the end of my tether at George Brown. It was starting to become clear to me what fucks they were, that they were telling people, including me, how bad I was, but offering no way to be good. You know, I went to theater school and they told me I could do anything I wanted in this business, like that I had the capability of playing any role. And then a year and a half later, they said, "You are awful." And I didn't have the language for it, but I had the energetic of, But no one's fucking taught me except you. Like, I'm sorry, but every single person who comes to my Meisner class leaves better. I guarantee it. I fucking guarantee it. Whether they stick around for 10 sessions or one session, which is 6 weeks, they leave better. The needle's moved. Imagine going to the gym for 6 weeks with a personal trainer and assuming that you're not, like, cheat dieting with candy, you're in worse shape. And then they go, yeah, you're crap at this. Like, it's fucking unconscionable. They owe me my money back. Anyways, as I didn't have the language for this but had the energetic of I need a solution, David Rotenberg had come to start teaching us. So a lot of you know him in theater school. Or around Toronto, and then really connected with him, loved what we were working on, and had a trip lined up to Los Angeles, basically to visit my cousin Brendan and my cousin, my best friend John, and it was great. And so I remember then Bruce Clayton, he comes and teaches sort of the second half, and I was like, Bruce, you're never gonna believe this. My buddy Tom, through a customer at his video store, long story short, I got a meeting at William Morris with John Travolta's agent. Any advice for me? Now, okay, keep in mind, I'm a student at a theater school. I'm so eager. And I was like, any thoughts? And David and I had really connected. I think we actually did a scene from Edmund, and they just did a big successful production of that at the storefront, one of my favorite theaters in the world. After my spring bit of work on liver there and meeting all those brilliant people. Anyways, so I was like, Bruce, you know, any advice? Like, this is your guys' arena. And Bruce just kind of looks at me and goes, get a great haircut and they won't have a lot of time for you. Do you know? You got 5 minutes or less. I was like, okay, great. So I did it. I got a great haircut. I kind of worked out my tight five. Anyways, I go down. Go to William Morris, meet a bunch of people, John Travolta's agent, meet a bunch of junior agents. They're like, sorry, why are you here? And I said, my buddy Tom, who I know from Western, owns a video store, one of the customers. His, like, sister knows so-and-so who knows Nicole. And they just laughed and went, well, you're here now. Let's have a meeting. It went great. 5 years later, one of those people became my first agent at a different agency. True story. And they just kind of said, listen, we love you, but you don't have a body of work and you don't live here. So stay in touch. So that was kind of it. Great stuff. About a year later, I'm going to take David Rotenberg's class. And my agent, Deb Peck, goes, honey, call me. I think I had a pager, so maybe she couldn't have left that message. Maybe I'm just imagining it. And if I'm making her sound like Joey Tribbiani's agent, then I'm doing my job. She was the best. And so I call her. I was like, hey. She goes, it's not going to work with David. I said, why? She said, he says you're a liar. It's like, what? She goes, he says you're a liar. And she's not from New York. And she doesn't sound like that. But it's how I picture her. So I said, I don't understand. She goes, I don't know. You got to go talk to him to take his class. Now, what Deb did is she never really went to theater or anything. She kind of used Rotenberg as a way to sort of vet where her clients were at, which is pretty legit, you know. And so, anyways, I go to his class. I hang around while they're finishing, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? And he goes, look, a lot of times a young actor wants to appear a certain way, and they will aggrandize themselves, and I don't have any time for that. And I looked at him and I said, are you talking about me meeting with Travolta's agent at William Morris? And he just kind of nods. And I said, that all happened. And he looked at me. And to his credit, he goes, I can see that that did. And I said, yeah, what? And he goes, yeah, you know, I'd love if you took my class. I think I might have told this story on the podcast with one of the actors. I might have told it with Damon. Anyways, it's all right. We have stories. We retell them. Anyways, I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, I'm sorry. I'd love if you want to take my class, you can take my class. I was like, yeah, fine. I'll take the class. Fucking Bruce had told him I was a liar. What the fuck? Here I am, young, eager, and a goddamn student of the institution. Again, I mean, that institution was fucked top to bottom. That is supposed to be teaching people. Let's assume you did think someone was lying, and they were a young student trying to become something in the industry that you purport to be an expert of, i.e. the instructor. Wouldn't you maybe pull them aside and go, hey, listen, I get what you're trying to do here, but I mean, how fucking childish? Seriously. I still think that's so fucking lame. It's so funny, man. Like, so I go down to General Hospital, and I'm a full-blown fucking drug addict on that show. I mean, I'm showing up strung out. I've got fucking track marks. And I've got, like, the executive producer, the leads of the show. Like, everybody. I got Maurice Bernard. He's a fucking baller, badass, awesome guy. And he's taking time out of his day that I'm holding up by being all over the map. And he's putting his hand on my heart. There's people around, so I'm not betraying a private thing. And he's just saying, listen, I don't know what's going on, but I got you, man. Whatever's happening with you, we love you. We got you. Now look, addiction's a fucked up thing. With all the support in the world and all the success in the world that I could ask for, it wasn't enough. I had to get fired from that job. However, my point is this. Here I was legitimately being a fuck up, and I'm being offered, I mean, the fucking executive producer of that show got me in touch with someone who ultimately led to my full-on recovery from booze and drugs. This is how these people were putting not just words out there, but actually supporting, helping, you know? Whereas teachers at a very fucking small institution are running around while you're asking for their help and going, yeah, you're a liar. You seem like you're trying to aggrandize yourself. It's like, no, guess what, fuckers? I am this big. I can go to LA and get a fucking agent when I'm 23 or whatever the fuck it was. Why is that so scary to you? That's not that big. That's called our business. That's called like a lawyer getting a summer position with a judge, you know, and an associate student. That's called a prof getting the chance to like TA with a good professor. That's called an actor going to LA and getting an agent and a meeting. Like, what the fuck? Anyways, it's weird because there was a taint to my first trip to LA, and it came from Toronto. Wait, did he say taint? Doesn't he mean fashnugas? Doesn't he mean choda? Anyways, I've met Bruce many times since, and he's never, ever owned that one. Whatever. He probably forgot he did it. Probably not the first person he went around saying shit about. Or maybe I am. I don't know. Maybe he stays up awake at night and doesn't know how to make the amends. Call me. Call me. We'll have tea and put it behind us. It's not behind me. I still have a resentment about it, apparently. Which means I'll probably have to fucking find him and apologize to him for something someday. Damn you, fucking spiritual recovery. Damn you. So that first trip, John and I, oh, we did so much fun shit. Fucking went into Hollywood. He was in La Habra going to dentistry school. Or was it dentistry? No, chiropractic college. Anyways, I think he had his Jeep at the time. So much fun. Went up to the top of Bev Hills and just drove through the city and went to, I don't know where we went. I don't remember. Probably the Standard and stuff like that. Like, it was fun, man. And then I stayed with Brendan for the back half. And I remember, you know, mountain biking from, you know, Melrose and Fairfax kind of area all the way out to the beach and back. And including, like, going up, like, I'm mountain biking and I look over and there's the Playboy Mansion because I was looking for the hills too. And this was back before I'd ever smoked. Oh, those days. Ah, well, I'm done now. Hey-o. Am I? Yes, I am. Although I had a nice smoke last night, the Bellhop. So I go to the Best Western And it's, I'm beat after this drive, and it's icy, and I'm putting the hood thing on, and I'm at the Best Western, and I say to the guy, you know, what's the rate? And he tells me, and I'm like, nah, you know, I did a lot better than that last night at a Super 8 or whatever. And he's like, I'm sorry, it's the best I can do. I said, okay, look, I'm gonna move, look, there's a hotel right next door. So I go to the hotel next door that shall remain nameless. It's a chain though. And the lobby smelt like fucking rank BO. So I was like, all right, I'll go to the next one next door, another chain. Oh my God, it smelled worse. You know, it smelled like a baby shat in my mouth and then a cat pissed in the baby shit. And so I went back to the Best Western and the dude's out front smoking. And I was like, hey, if you let me bum one of those, I'll stay in your hotel tonight. And he said, sure. And since you came back, I'll give you the like military rate or whatever. It all worked out. I had a hell of a sleep and it did not smell other than my tobacco breath. Boy, did I enjoy that cigarette. Don't smoke, kids. It's bad for you. It's bad for you. So anyways, that first trip was phenomenal. Then I remember going back to meet who eventually became my manager, the awesome Mel McKeon. And then I basically moved there. I think I had one or two more visits, but, you know, living there, it's weird to say how many times I've crossed, let's say, into California, because, I don't know, hundreds? Like, every time I'd go for Christmas and back, every time I mean, it might not be the actual land border, it might be in the air. Had a girlfriend who lived in Vancouver and then New York. It's a lot of trips that year. Anyways, always feels great. Well, maybe it didn't always. There were times where LA was very hard for me. I mean, look, when I talk about those rough times, they were rough. Having come through the other side, it's almost like my drive yesterday in the torrential rain or my drive home from Michigan the other night in the 2-foot snow. Every time I tell it, the snow's going to get a little higher, by the way. Although, Russell, I think you'll back me up on this. 2-foot is not unreasonable. The coming through the other side, it's so fucking worth it. And it's part of what I crave in this life, as I talked about it with getting off the track a little. Now look, oh man, again, do I bother talking about this shit? Like, I don't even know if I'm gonna get a meeting with a good manager next week. I might not. It might not be a great time. I don't have any heat. I've also got a real great demo life career, like blah, blah, blah. But that nervousness and fear, it's not unfounded. Like when I went down before, out of theater school, that was just personality. They liked my personality, but I had no body of work. But by the time I was meeting with Mel, I had like blockbuster series leads, you know, ton of theater under my belt. So it was a very like legit, bam. This is where I belong. This time, it's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what life looks like in LA. Happy, healthy, with a career. But no big thing to automatically make it the thing to be there. So we'll see. Blah, blah, blah. I keep talking about this. But it is what's going on for me when I think about anything beyond this drive, right? I mean, I have goals and desires. So we'll see. We'll see how they unfold. Most of my goals and desires don't unfold the way I want, but anyways, those tough times were tough. I destroyed a career, 100%, like winning career, you're down. I mean, this was pre-social networking, right? But imagine like you see your buddy go to LA on Facebook or your acquaintance and then boom, he's booking work down there and he's on TV at your gym. Like that's what was happening for me. So it was very legit, you know, So, you know, that got compromised. Better things came of it. Who gives a shit? Well, obviously I do, because I keep coming back to it. And by the way, I this is part of who I am. So when I do these podcasts, I'm honestly not ever totally sure what I've talked about or not. And one of my least favorite things about some of my podcasters is when they circle around only two or three main points. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? As long as I don't crash my car and I go to bed without a booze or drug in my system, who cares if I repeat a story or an idea? But I have this tale I tell myself and I tell you guys about going to the show, going to LA, starting to make it, destroying it on booze and drugs, going into debt, coming home, rebuilding the career, finding love. Life's better now than it ever was, but I still want certain things. But forget the current, still want certain things. That's this story that can sometimes loop in my head. And I don't think it's helpful. You know, I mean, it's weird because I'm not like a guy who peaked in high school. Like, I don't think I peaked in high school. I don't think I peaked on General Hospital. Or from 25 to 30 when I was, you know, booking a lot of lead work in spite of my behaviors. But that guy was not peaked. That guy was fucking not even in the game yet. Truly. But acting-wise, might have been getting some good shit coming his way or making a few more bucks a year than anyone at that age deserves to. I don't know. But that guy was not in the game. That guy wasn't even farm league, man. That guy was like fucking whatever. Not even on radar for the game. So now we're in the game. You know, it's on. Life is being lived. But that little tale kicks into my head. And usually I feel like these things, I always say this, you know, when I go on rants about how you should behave, when I'm feeling extra good, it's because I feel like the only way this fucking loop in my head or in your head, in our heads, ends is actually when we just kind of get bored of it. Or even when something so bad happens, we might lose a leg and then still go do the thing that lost us our leg. But until we're bored of that definition of self or that loop, and I know my current fucking agent's bored of it. He doesn't want to keep hearing about what it was like and what I hope it'll be like again. Fuck that. I think my goal, I'm going to make a contract with you guys. Sensei Suino, Sensei Dauphin. We like to call this, you know, walking it forward. How am I going to walk this plan forward? My plan is simple. I am going to actively push this looped bullshit story about myself out of my head by the time I hit LA. So if I want to fucking, I got another, what, 2.5 hours? If I want to loop on this, I can for about 2 hours, and then I'll hit the border of like the greater LA county. And then every time that thought shows up, it's going to be a version of don't talk to my friend like that. Hey, Dad, quit fucking telling me what I'm not. Or shut the fuck up. I'll go that far with it. We're just going to, I thought about that this morning. What occurred to me this morning? What was I thinking about? Oh, fuck. I think somebody who tweeted, they had been in a show. They got a role on a show that I was really close to. And they tweeted something. Then I had to unfollow them. This was like a week ago. And then this morning I woke up. And it usually happens when I'm tired, right? When we're tired, our fucking monsters see our weakness and want to penetrate. And so, you know, it's 7:30 and I went to bed after midnight and I've been driving 17 hours. And all of a sudden, I haven't even opened my eyes and I'm thinking about this guy. And why I'm not on that show. Insane. Like, that's insanity. And then I actually was just like, I actually, for the first time in a long time, was like, shut the fuck up. Go, like, shut up. Quit your shit. And move on. And what was nice about it was that it worked. I haven't actually thought about that till now. It happened that quick. And I talk at great length about wanting to be kind to ourselves and wanting to be, what's the word? Like, gentle. I really believe in that. However, sometimes, I remember once this guy was in my house at a party. We were all fucking coked up and, you know, one of my girlfriends, like girlfriends, was there, and she brought this guy, and he was being aggressive with me physically, but not fighting, just kind of putting his hands on me, and I was like, hey, don't touch me. And then he'd put his hands on me, and I was like, don't touch me. And then he'd do it again. You know, he's being all cokey, whatever. And I just said, if you fucking touch me again, I'm going to hit you, right? Like, I won't even tell you. It's just going to happen. Or whatever. I don't know what I said. I don't want to make it sound more cool than it was. Because I was probably, you know, I wasn't slurring. I was jacked up. But I was, whatever I said. He kind of got it. He backed off. And then he walked up and he was about to put his hands up. And I just turned to my friend and I said, hey, B, if your fucking friend touches me once more, I'm going to punch him in the fucking head. Get him the fuck out of here. Like, he's gone. You're out. And then he just kind of looked at me and said, you're out. Get the fuck out of here. And he left. Now, luckily that went easily. But sometimes when someone won't leave your house and they keep putting their hands on your head, gentle ain't the answer. And I actually learned that this morning through a very knee-jerk reaction with myself that I've stopped having for a while because it was really important for my pendulum to go the other way. My pendulum had to go in the direction of loving kindness towards myself because I'd been so abusive to myself and not in a way that's like, as a thought occurs, going, hey, thought, fuck off. It was more like, you're a loser, you're not good enough, oh, you're so dumb. And it's all a version of fucking trying to tap dance around the eggshells of my parents' house. You know, the perfectionism for me is not a hard thing to trace the origins of. It's very simply, if I can put together everything perfectly, maybe no one's going to get drunk or fight tonight. Never worked, but it's textbook. It's not unique. Eggshells, always on eggshells. So then I'd abuse myself when these things wouldn't work out, as if the yelling in the house wasn't abuse enough version of it, you know. So I got comfortable in abuse. If somebody wasn't insulting someone because I was alone, then I had to insult myself. It sucks, but it's true. And by the way, I mean, I grew up with my mom telling me at least weekly, men are pigs, men are bastards, men are the causes of all evil in this world. I mean, that's a fact. Imagine me sitting down, your daughter, and saying women are bitches, women are whores, women are the reason everything's shit in the world. Like, you'd never let me talk to your daughter again. You'd probably physically hurt me or throw me out of your house. And you'd be right to do so. So this ain't a woe is me thing, but you know, this is the lesson I got as a kid. So not that surprising that when I became a man, I started to hurt myself and abuse myself. Why was I worth a good life? I was a man, I was a bastard, I was a pig, I was scum. And I mean, again, fact, my mom might deny that and it's whatever. We all have our perceptions, but that happened, and it happened often, and so I had to learn how to not speak like that, and I kind of got it around age 34. Thank you, therapy, and thank you, groups of recovery. However, sometimes it can go too much the other way, I think. Sometimes when those crap thoughts creep in, going, I hear you, thought of fucking some actor who's probably an awesome guy and got a job because he's a good actor too. Why am I thinking of him in fucking Albuquerque at 7:30? So little thought, oh, I love you thought. I recognize you thought. You're valid thought. But I need you to go away thought. Yeah, sometimes the shortcuts, fuck off. I mean, it is. Sometimes the shortcut is fuck off. Sometimes the thought is the rattlesnake that's venomous and you have a rake. So you don't need to understand the rattlesnake. You just got to swing the rake. Woo! Oh! 100 to Barstow. Man, oh man. Happy, happy camper. You know, aside from my desires for this trip, there's so many friends I want to see, so many little routes I want to drive, and new ones, you know? There's a crew of actors I'm going to hang out with down there who I don't know that well from Toronto who are down there and do a little work. Go check out some of the old Playhouse stuff. You know, go to some of my old stomping grounds and coffee shops. Always love to hit the Guitar Center on Sunset. And then also, you know, Kobe lived somewhere he didn't live when I was here. So new pathways. And the other thing is I want to check out a bunch of the car culture down here. I'll do a lot more of that in the winter. But, you know, I want to check out a few of the mechanics who I didn't go to back in the day. Interesting one, you know. My guy Otto, love him, miss him, great guy. But I do wish that I'd gotten around a bit more, you know. It's nice to have someone who knows the car and services it. But at the same time, I do, you know, there's such a vibrant fucking car culture in L.A., that when I got to Toronto, I was like, damn, I wish I checked out some other shops. And now I get the chance to, because I get to do round two with the whole car in LA thing. That's part of it too, eh? Is that I never got to enjoy the fruits of the Porsche thing in LA as a sober guy. So, not that I was always driving around drunk. Obviously, I've mentioned that I did do that more than I ever should have, but it's more that there was a mania about everything, you know? So I'm really looking forward tomorrow to popping the top of this Targa and just fucking cruising Mulholland. Go meet some friends, go do some shit, take a drive alone, whatever. Man, am I looking forward to that. And it's nice that it's, again, a bit like what I've been talking about with a lot of this stuff, even these long drives, like just less dark side driving it. And that's an interesting thing as an artist, eh? Like, as an artist, it was real easy to get energetic about shit. Like, I used to think things like, I'm fucking better than everyone in this fucking room, and this script's a piece of shit, but I'm so fucking good that I'm gonna make it work. Like, you know, I mean, fuck, we're not chatting between takes if I don't tell you what I used to think. I don't feel that way anymore. I kind of like look around and I'm like, hey, these guys do good work. And I think I could really make this thing play, and I think it plays. Like, it's collaborative. That's my point. It's, things have become happily collaborative. And even Jason Segel, he was talking on Marc Maron about when he got the script for Freaks and Geeks, he initially was like, I don't want to audition for that. That's like a lame-ass Nickelodeon show. Well, A, it wasn't. And B, fuck it. Do a Nickelodeon show. Or not, if you don't want to. But you can't always tell from the page how it's going to go. So may as well go be collaborative about it. Anyways, this is how I operate now. And it's a lot more pleasant, a lot more peaceful. But there's less of a, like, obvious, that's who that guy is, that's what he's doing. I always talk about the angry young man. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing to have that feeling about even the driving in L.A. I don't need to drive Mulholland that fast, especially not with the top off, because there's such an oral sensation, and I don't mean the head the hooker's going to be giving me. Oral, it's a homonym, people. It sounds the same, but it's not the same. Oral, and it feels fast, even at 60K an hour around those roads. So, again, it's not about proving anything or whatever. It's just about doing it. Weird. It's a crazy world, my friends. Okay, I gotta pee so fucking bad because of my little peanut-sized bladder. I'm gonna find a little rest stop, hit that, and I think we'll call that. I want to enjoy this next little bit of a ride in silence. You guys are the best. Thanks for taking this trip with me. And that's a wrap.